This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today we have with us
Ross Kessels
and Vicky Marie Buchanan.
And I'm Stuart Burks. So Vicky, last week we got to the point you had had a child, gone back to your job, well, to a different job in New Zealand, and your husband was a house husband.
That's right. Yep. And in that time, I have to say, there was a scheme that if you had been there for the 6 months, I think, if you worked for 6 months, somehow you got your back pay. Anyway, we got some money in the back pay, so I stayed to the time, I think, for the year.
So you'd had maternity leave, and if you go back and work for the length of the maternity leave, you get some extra pay.
Yes, we got some extra pay, which actually built a double garage in our house, so that was good. So we chose to do that. And then Murray got some work. He had a couple of years. He was trying to get into sports administration, and so we did go through a few redundancies in that time, but I did leave in New Zealand and did contract work typing up in the attic of our house. And so I'd gone from being a shorthand typist and a typist working on an Imperial typewriter, very clunky with the return carriage, to then I think in Air New Zealand we progressed to an electric typewriter with a golf ball.
So this was contract work for Air New Zealand, or
no,
just
Jeb? No, it was for Wellington Regional Council, actually.
So how did you get into that?
A word of mouth, and somebody wanted some typing done. Okay. And so I did some typing, and that helped pay through redundancy, helped pay the mortgage, helped pay power bills and things like that.
It was seen as sort of supplementary income or support of the household?
Just support of the household, really, as income.
Yeah.
It got us by, got us fed, got us by. Mm. And that's how we got through. And I guess that goes right back to my childhood of resilience and just working through and finding openings and taking the opportunities. Through all this, I was still heavily involved in my drama activities. And so with children, two children, fast forward, two children later, I was still involved, and I was doing some, first of all, I did some performances in Wellington Operatic Society. And at that time, it was still an era where you had volunteers doing the lighting. So you were teaching the volunteers, and often they were teenagers or people just genuinely interested. They could do the lighting. Somebody else came and did the costumes, and somebody else came and was on the props table.
So your things in drama, it wasn't just the acting then that you were involved in?
Well, I was acting, but by osmosis, I was taking in the learning of all the other stagecraft skills as well, and had a real appreciation for it. But the beauty of that period and that era was that everybody could be involved in it. Families were involved in theatre because mum could be out there on the props table, or dad could be helping on the lights, and then so-and-so's doing costumes or so-and-so's on stage. You know, so it was still very much family oriented.
You're talking about the past. It's changed since then?
Yes, hugely. Then health and safety came in, which was good and bad. But then when you were getting into your shows, into the big theatres, and even in the little theatres now, you can't have your volunteers. You've got to have professionals doing it, or you've... And that's the shame of it, is because you've lost that growing community where they can learn and be part of that world.
It's sort of
really
voluntary apprenticeship.
It was a lovely period.
You say health and safety. Were there many accidents when it was voluntary?
No. Never heard of them, really. Okay. No. I mean, no. But now you've got a big 100-page health and safety dossier of working in the entertainment industry.
Yeah, you got to work out a whole problem, what might go wrong and what's your contingency plan.
Yeah. And that only came through in sort of late in the 2000s. Mm. So I enjoyed that. That was a whole scene. And so you did. It was, again, another community of coming together where it was involving families and things. And I was also teaching speech and drama privately. So here we go. I'd had the teachers earlier on and I'd become a teacher. So
were you involved in, you were doing them, were you acting in plays that were put on? What sort of plays?
I'd switched to mainly musical theatre. I could do everything, but my love was musical theatre. Mm-hmm. And I think that came from always, and again, childhood, choirs, singing. Yeah. I loved singing.
So what stood out to you, thinking back, what were the fun performances you...
When I got character of the Great Waltz, I loved, and that was just the pure fantasy of, and that was Strauss, and Strauss waltzes, and waltzing on the stage in these great elegant costumes. It was beautiful, I loved it. Then I had principal roles, like when I'm thinking which ones, Fiddler on the Roof, and I played Hoddle, the middle daughter, Phil Bennington operatic. And that gave me huge insight to the Jewish community, and went to the synagogue and listened and learned about the Jewish faith and aspects of the Jewish faith, and took that onto stage. Loved that show. And King and I, and was tucked in that one. Then I switched into Gilbert and Sullivan. Why did I switch into Gilbert and Sullivan? I think then because it had a better rehearsal schedule for young families.
Yeah, okay.
And so it was only, if you were principal, it was a Tuesday night and then Thursday and a Sunday afternoon, and it suited our family for me to do that. So then I got into the Gilbert and Sullivan music and appreciated totally different style.
And the words, which are great.
So lots of fun there.
Which particular one, Gilbert and Sullivan?
Oh, did a lot there. Patience.
Yeah.
I took the role there of Patience. And Yeoman of the Guard.
Yeah.
And Mikado.
Yeah.
Okay. Those are three. I'd have to go back, you know.
Yeah, okay.
Those are sort of there. And then all this time I was learning singing too, studying singing. As well. Why was I studying singing? Because right back in school production days and things, I knew I'd lose my voice. And I'd think, why am I losing my voice? Well, I shouldn't be doing that with all my training. And then when I got learning singing, I really, really fine-tuned the breathing technique and things, which was really, really good. And so then as you're progressing and going through and learning more, and as I'm getting older too, it sounds silly, but I was too old for the young roles and I was too young for the old roles.
Yeah.
So therefore you change your role. And so then I went into operas as well. And so I did a lot of work in the chorus of operas and then latterly with the
Which amateur groups were putting on operas?
Oh, none. By this time, you're in the professional.
Oh, okay.
And
the chorus was professional as well? Or they'd have professional opera singers
plus an amateur. Like Dame Major, professionals.
Yes.
And other professionals coming through.
Yeah.
And we were paid, but we were paid something like $200 for the season or something. But we were paid, which was nice. Okay. You know, obviously it wasn't going to be the professional rate.
Yeah.
So, and that was good. That was really good because my skill in singing was progressing as well. So it was good. It was good learning to do that.
What operas?
A raft of operas. I have to think of all those. Fledermaus, La Traviata, and with the one that I took, one of the roles, principal roles, was Merry Widow. There's a lot that we did every year. And as well as that, I had an agent, and so did some TV advertisements and a little bit of movies and things like that. All really me being very, very versatile, and also bringing in money to help the family because we were going through redundancies and things like that too. So that wasn't the purpose, but I used that skill.
Okay. Going through redundancies, so what sort of time was this? Was there as much turmoil in the economy then?
Yeah, that was 82 to 86, probably around there, 87.
Yeah, so
it was a time similarly to what we're going through now, really. Interest rates were higher, but much higher than they are now. So interest rates were huge, and you were working hard to keep your mortgage.
Yes.
Mortgages weren't what they are today, but relative in the pay scale. And kids, power, food, you know, similar issues going on as today. I was just being versatile, really, and entrepreneurial and putting it all together and bringing in some money where I could.
And find it quite satisfying.
And also living my passion, really, and having kids by day, and it was good. And then I progressed. Then I was approached, our sons were at St Mark's Church School in Wellington, and then one day I was asked. I was rung and asked if I would take a little kiddie for lessons because he had some learning difficulties and they needed something to help him with his mindset, really. And so I said, yeah, sure. And that got me thinking, oh, I should get some more students because
Did you need a qualification for that?
No, because I had the qualification. I was by now. I had my diploma, my LTCL in speech and drama in Trinity College to teach speech and drama.
Oh, okay.
So
LTCL.
Licentiate of Trinity College, London.
Okay.
Yep. So I was very qualified to do that. So okay. I'll put a notice
up. Hang on, you didn't talk about doing that. That was something that you were doing on top of all this other stuff.
Yes, that was. So right from 8 years old, going Auckland to Nairi Lovie. To speech and drama classes, you start off with initial, then grade one, grade two.
So it's a bit like the piano stuff as well.
And then later, as I got older, and I was married, I did my diplomas as well. And really, it's a progression and life experience getting to those points and those teaching qualifications. So I went up and said, could I put a notice up on your notice board then? I might as well take, see if there's more students.
That's St Mark's. Yeah.
And then the principal was coming by and said, oh, would you come to my office and have a chat with me? And by this stage, I was working part-time for a voluntary subject association. So I was getting an honorarium.
Voluntary Subject Association.
So, Physical Education New Zealand, it was called.
Okay, yep.
And at the time, in education, there were new curricula being drafted for all the core subjects.
Yeah.
So, I went into the principal and talked to her, and she, and of course, the arts curriculum was coming into development in the next year or two as well. And she asked if I would be interested in teaching drama in the school as a curriculum subject, which I sort of took a double take at, because I wasn't a registered teacher, because I had a little job, a part-time job, doing my now national administrator of PENS, and having two boys growing up. And so she worked out, she knew how we could do it. I could have an LAT and then I could work on the registration process while I was working.
You could have an LAT.
Limited Authority to Teach.
Okay.
Is what they called it. And you have that.
And that was on a slightly lower rate of pay?
Of course. And then you start you're learning the craft of teaching. But as an LAT, you have to have a registered teacher with you.
Okay.
So the classroom teacher would come to the lessons. Okay. So I made a big, bold decision because I was really, in this period, I was tended to be the regular breadwinner of bringing the money in for the family. And so this was contract work for initially 3 months, and then we'll see what happens after that. Something in my faith, I thought, I need to do this. And again, I guess it was also because I was at a crossroads do I find my passion, or do I go into the corporate world and bring in the money and make it all safe and honky-dory for the family?
Yes.
And
I'll just ask, the follow your passion. And there is the idea, sort of, sometimes men are brought up with, you have to support need good, steady income for the family rather than the enjoyment. Yeah. But were there sort of safe, better paid, you could say, there's a safe track here that will support my family, but I won't do that, I'll do the other?
Yes.
Yeah.
I did that.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
So it was gutsy. And it was a real step in faith, to be honest, to be doing that, because she said I would have a 3-month contract and then that would finish at Christmas.
Yeah.
And what would I do? I did it. I did it because I guess it was my experience back in New Zealand.
Was there a suggestion that there might be a further contract?
Suggestion that there would be a further contract, but it was a private school, so would it? Don't know. Anyway, I took it. Part of me thought too, in my upbringing, make yourself indispensable in the first 3 months and then you'll have to employ you following that. But at that same time, it was the introduction of the arts curriculum, and that was coming to the fore.
Which is? This was a major change,
was it? The New Zealand Education Arts Curriculum. So that was coming up as well.
And this brought massive changes, did it?
Huge changes in New Zealand. So that was 1998. So the curriculum, I think, came in 2000. So it was all a big change in New Zealand education.
Yeah. So what was driving that? Do you know?
Government.
They just thought we need to be teaching more arts rather than science, or more structured arts teaching?
There always was, in a school curriculum, always was visual art and music.
Okay. But it was fairly informally run before that?
In the primary school, yes.
Yeah.
In a secondary school, no. So the thrust was NCEA and the different curricula, because the focus was the secondary schools.
So they were doing this for not just for arts, but for other subjects as well. So there was a restructuring of teaching with the NCEA and setting measures and targets and so on. Okay.
So at the time when I was working for PENS, Physical Education New Zealand, the physical education curriculum was also being developed.
Yeah.
And that was one of the key things of PENS as well as supporting their professional base. So I was asked to then go along to meetings to represent the private schools in that, and to give my input into the drama aspect of it, which I did initially. And then meanwhile I was thinking, where does this go? That the school and the kids weren't used to drama in education, and to be honest, it was a real shell shock for me.
Yeah. Does this mean that there's a real shortage of experienced drama teachers, presumably?
So
you were making it up, or you already had the skills, but...
Well, no.
Or you were developing...
Well, I did have drama skills. I knew drama.
But teaching drama was another...
But teaching drama in another level. And also... There were
and assessing it, I suppose.
Well, I didn't even get onto that point. Month two. What was initially the hard bit was these kids. What opened up was a can of worms, really. And what very very quickly came to the fore was that it brought out where kids were at
there's almost a counselling role involved?
I remember going, there were some real social issues that were happening for some of those kids. Yes. And I remember going into the principal and saying, wow, and she was superb.
Yeah. Was this a normal school or low socioeconomic?
No, it was a normal school. It was a decile 10 school.
Yeah. Were there social workers in the school?
No. Okay. Primary. And so I remember going into the principal and saying, far out, I'm not a drama therapist, I'm a drama teacher, and she was superb, and she got the support that the students needed and things like that. And it all settled down, but by golly, it took that term to settle down. Yeah. And so from that, I was looking at the kids, where they were, what they needed. I also was looking at how you would develop a... progressive learning program using drama in education,
two things. Well, were the resources available that you could turn to?
No.
To nothing at all?
No, okay. Not at that point.
But and what I suppose in the literature and so on, they would have had some drama in that. So if they're going through Shakespeare or something,
Shakespeare's secondary. We talk in primary.
Primary. Yeah.
And it's really early in the primary.
Okay.
Drama was integrated into English activities, but if you had a journal, reading journal, and a reading play, you could do it. There were colleagues and earlier people that had really, really advocated for drama in education and worked tirelessly.
Yeah.
And they were, when I got onto my MA, of course, they were my go-to people.
So your MA you did after?
Yeah, I did afterwards.
Yeah. Okay.
But right at this point, they were probably out there, but I hadn't quite discovered them, really, at that point. And so it was just a really shell-shocked learning journey for that first term, and I think, to be fair for the principal as well, and to see the impact and how it all did settle down, but how drama had immediately brought it out.
The impact of
how
the issues going on.
The issues going on, and how, I guess what it does, you can have fact and issues out there, but then within that is how do people perceive that? How do they process it? And then what's left with the person once they've done that?
Yeah.
And if you have a meaningful learning process, you can take a drama experience in a play-based framework, and then you can go through a process, and then you can talk about the feelings as well, and what is the emotional impact of a scenario as well as
they're acting out a role.
So what is the emotional impact as well as the physical impact on the world, on the person, on relationships and things? And I think that's what drama brings to a learning experience. And I think we were starting to see, by the end of that term, we were starting to see that there was a framework there and there was something to this. What was it? How could I put it into words? Don't know, but it was there. Then I went to a Trinity College conference, a presentation, and they were putting out a new syllabus. Now, Trinity College had been a very formal, structured examination body, but behind the scenes, they obviously were working under a new syllabus, a new framework, given the fact that they were an international examining body, and they were, from their perspective, obviously thinking, how can we bring in the international literature, world perspectives into our curriculum?
Nice. So this is because these days in New Zealand, there'd be far more, how can we bring in more New Zealand content?
Oh, absolutely. Well,
so that's what you say, if they're overseas, that just
I mean, we're one of many countries.
Yeah, yeah.
So I saw this new syllabus. They were launching the new syllabus and saying, what do you think? And I opened it up and I saw a framework there where there was so much for groups and devised drama and improvised drama and devised drama for groups. And I immediately thought, this is a model, a framework that I could use progressively to in a classroom scenario, and then the whole class can be doing it or I can put it into groups. So I immediately saw how it could work in a learning environment in a classroom.
Mm-hmm.
So again, presented that to the principal and the staff to say, this is my vision, this is my dream, what do you think? And they were absolutely came on board, and that became my sort of framework, really.
Did you have links to drama teachers in other schools?
There were no drama teachers.
You were totally on your own.
Yeah, on primary school.
Yeah.
And that was the thing. The secondary schools were getting good resourcing and good support and focus because secondary school, NCEA.
Yeah.
Primary school was the poor relation, really, in it. And then drama and dance were the very poor relation.
But you get, if other schools still had the same obligations, then so they were
The obligations because they had the journal plays, I was taking it a step further and saying, if we had drama as a subject, like visual arts, like music, drama education, what would it look like?
Okay.
And so I was developing that.
Yeah.
So then from there, I worked that framework, and the following year, 1999, I really worked it. As well as that, I thought what would be a great assessment tool would be if the Trinity examiners who are here would come in and examine the kids in their group devised dramas or whatever. Yeah. So that became a really good international assessment.
Now you mentioned group devised dramas. Mm. The kids get together, think out a story, work out the script, and act it out.
The and what that brings is the social. Primary school kids that we're dealing with too, it could be a picture, it could be a statement that something's happening in society, it could be a real issue, it could be a story, you could take a myth, you know, so it's all progressive from the different age groups. I shaped it a little bit too because I felt, knowing the journey that some of these students have been on, knowing the by now knowing the impact of the emotions as well as the physical, I wanted to give every student the opportunity to learn and grow as much as they could in each experience. So I had a rule that every child had their voice in that performance as well, but also so that their whole development. Sorry, I've just lost my train of thought on that.
What they were going through.
Yeah, what they were going through. And then presenting it as well. There was something else I was going to say.
You put on performances for the parents?
We did. We put on, then we'd do an evening where we would show the parents what we were doing, and then they would do their exams as well.
When you see a voice, can you unpack that a bit? Because what was it? What they were going through, or what they felt?
Well, I think it was their insight into issues as well.
Yeah.
Because for me, it was really important that we start blending drama, education, insight into their world.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website. And a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.